God's Revolution, a series in 12 parts by Don Taylor, with Bernard Hepton as Cromwell and Nigel Anthony as Fairfax. Part 4, Summer Maneuvers. The agitators have taken effective control of the new model army. They have hatched a secret plan to guard the king, fearing that the Presbyterians or the Scots might seize him. And without the authority of Cromwell, Cornet Joyce takes the king to the army at Newmarket. Summer Maneuvers.
Cornet Joyce!
What is it, Corporal Thompson?
It's a large body of horse approaching, along the Cambridge Road, about 2 miles ahead.
Could you see who they are?
No, not clearly. Their tenant looks like Colonel Wallace, but I couldn't be sure at that distance.
How many?
Well, at least one regiment. Probably nearer two.
Too many for us. What shall we do? If it's us they're after...
Who else is it likely to be?
We can't fight them. Not that many.
Certainly not with a king with us.
Is the king all right?
Very relaxed. Talking and joking with the troopers about 30 yards back.
We found them all right, Colonel Wally. About a mile ahead.
Is the king with them?
I can't tell a set of this distance. Halt the men when we're about half a mile apart. I'll ride over and meet them with you, Major Swallow, and a guard of 50 troopers.
That's Wally for sure, and Major Swallow with him. Well guarded.
We'll meet them halfway.
Just the two of us?
Just the two.
Cornet Joyce?
Cornet Thompson?
Good afternoon, Colonel Wally.
You have the king with you?
Yes, sir, we do. He's well guarded and in good health.
You left Holdenby without orders, Cornet. You must surrender yourselves to me. I have been ordered with my regiment to take over the King's Guard.
By whom, sir?
By the Lord General Fairfax. He is in command of the army, and the Lieutenant General is with him.
What has happened to the Council of Agitators?
We are all bound up in unity, Cornet Joyce. Soldiers and officers together.
The Lord be praised for it. That is good news, sir.
It is good news. But I must tell you that if you do not resign your command immediately, I shall be forced to compel you. There are 1,500 men behind me.
No need for that, sir. I submit to the Lord General's orders very willingly and with the greatest joy.
Where is the king?
A few ranks back, sir. See, you can't miss him. He sits a horse as well as any man in the army.
Colonel Wally, Your Majesty, respectfully at your service. The Lord General Fairfax sends you his most loyal greetings and has requested me to take charge of your guard.
The Lord General does me great honor, but I am very happy with these gentlemen. They are honest fellows and good companions.
I am very glad to hear your good opinion of them, sir. But I am instructed to return with you to Holdenby, from which place, sir, you should not have been removed.
No, Colonel, I do not wish to return to Holdenby. Since I was removed from there against my wishes in the first place, I shall now go on to Newmarket. I will not be galloped from pillar to post across the whole kingdom. You may accompany me there if you wish, or if not, not.
My orders?
Your orders are no concern of mine, Colonel. I do not intend to return to Holdenby.
Very well, Your Majesty. I shall ride with you as far as Cambridge tonight, and I shall send to the Lord General for further instruction.
Do as you please, sir. Ride on, gentlemen. Dinner time is approaching, and we all need a rest.
All right, Cornet. Move your men on. We'll join you on the ridge.
And around, trot. Forward!
Everywhere in London, Penelope, you could see that tower. It used to have a spire on it, but it fell down years ago. A huge building, fit for a race of giants, not men.
What's all that wood round it?
Scaffolding. The whole building's in a state of collapse. The king's architect, Mr. Jones, built a vast new portico at the West End, big enough to rival Rome. But he would have done better to spend the money shoring the whole thing up before it collapses above the congregation's ears. What's all the noise, coachman? Can you see?
I don't know, sir. Some sort of crowd ahead of us.
And our house is in the churchyard?
Yes, but not among tombstones. It isn't a churchyard now, more of a meeting place. One of the great centres of the city. Sermons are preached there. I saw Dr. Dunn on more than one occasion when I was a younger man. And the bookshops, of course, plenty of bookshops.
You knew London would be big. I never expected this.
From Aldgate to the east, to Covent Garden, from Southwark to Tottenham Fields, one of the great cities of the world. Athens was a mere suburb to it.
How many people?
Scholars, saints, swindlers and assassins, and every degree of human virtue or wickedness in between. Hey, what the...
I'm going to have to stop, sir. It's a great mob of people.
Well, what's going on?
They can't ask me, so you better hang on. They'll turn it over if they feel inclined.
But what can we do?
Nothing, sir. Just sit tight and keep your head down.
Why are they shouting and roaring like animals?
Because they've taken leave of their senses and reverted to the nature of beasts. The rational thing is to ask...
Be careful, Father.
You, good fellow. What's going on?
It's the Reform Marders and the apprentices going up to Westminster.
Reform Marders? Who are they?
Old soldiers, sir, out of employment.
You mean cavaliers?
Old souls. Can't stop now.
I can see a lot of soldiers among them. New model army men, too, by their buff coats.
You, sir, what's the commotion?
We're all off to beat on the doors of the House of Commons.
Yeah, and knock them down if need be. Why? What do you want?
To raise an army to defend the city.
That's right.
If in Fairfax is all foot, and those lads will be a cavalrymen from Paris and Greece.
They're from France and his regiment.
We all left when the Anabaptists and Madmen took over. Who are you defending us against?
The army are marching to sack the city. But we got Colonel Massey and Colonel Gray to command us, and we'll soon stop them, won't we, boys?
And they've kidnapped the king. That's treason. Who has? Cromwell and the army. Come on, keep moving there. You're causing a hold up.
Father, what have we walked into?
I have no idea anything of this kind was going on.
What has France been up to?
Coachman, will we be able to get to St. Paul's?
In a few minutes, I reckon, sir. There's about 2,000 or 3,000 of them. Wait, if you sit still for 5 minutes, they'll be gone. If they're off to Westminster, we should get through all right.
Then we must be patient, like sailors riding out a storm.
Are the army really coming to sack the city? Francis was heading in the opposite direction.
That was nearly a week ago, and it is in the nature of armies to do such things. Let us hope not.
Come in, Captain Reynolds. Sit down.
Thank you, sir.
Pleasant as it is in Newmarket, I must ride for Sir John Cutts' house at Childerley in half an hour, but I have to see you before I go on a most urgent matter.
I'm at your service, Lieutenant General. Is the King at Childerley?
He refuses to go back to Holdenby, which, between ourselves, is no bad thing. He's safer close at hand at the moment.
I assume you knew of Joyce's mission and approved it when you met him in your garden.
Assume no such thing, sir. Joyce acted without orders. You'd be wiser never to discuss the matter at all.
Yes, of course, I understand.
Tell me, Captain, what would you say to the King if you were me, or Fairfax?
I think I should tell him to trust the army.
You'd be wasting your breath. If he could hang us all for rebels and traitors, he'd do it tomorrow.
But he can't.
I suspect he thinks he still may.
I think I should make proposals to him for the settlement of the nation.
Yes, yes, of course. But what proposals?
That he should be king, but Parliament sovereign. That men's consciences must be free with no priests or bishops to interfere.
Or presbyters.
Or presbyters. And that the men who won the victory should be rewarded.
Oh, you'd say that, would you? In what way rewarded?
With some say in the affairs of state, so that those spiritual freedoms we all risk our lives for should be permanently safeguarded. No man can ever be sure his liberty is safe unless it is in his own hands.
What say can the common soldier have?
I don't know, sir. I only know that without the common soldier there would be no liberty for any of us, gentlemen or commoners. And that if we forget that, we do it at our peril. We may have to fight for it again, and if we have no common soldiers to bear the battle for us, we shall soon find ourselves enslaved.
Very good, Captain, and very true. You speak out openly, which I like. Even if your opinions are a little more extreme than I imagine from a gentleman's son who's been at the Inns of Court. And what if the King says no to your proposals? What then?
Well, he can hardly say no, sir. He has no power to do otherwise than as we tell him to do.
And if he still says no?
He won't, surely.
No. I don't think so either. Not in the end. Captain Reynolds, I have an important task for you. Since we returned to the army, the Lord General and myself have been in continuous discussion with every faction among us, including the Council of Agitators, Sixby, Lockyer, and the rest of them. They're all good fellows, whose energy I admire. I don't need to make it clear to you how very important our unity is at the present time. Parliament has cravenly surrendered its responsibilities in making such a foolish attack upon us, as if a man should cut off his right arm before his field's dug. So it seems certain that it will fall upon God's soldiers to make a settlement in the kingdom. As if the toil of winning the victory were not enough. The agitators are to sit with us in future army councils, but they are also to sit separately, so as to represent the men more fully. Now, this is a healthy and spiritual democracy, which I'm sure cannot help but be most pleasing to God. But we have agreed that a certain number of officers should sit with them. They sit with us, we sit with them. I have asked that an officer should be their chairman, and I have proposed you for that task.
That is a great honor, sir.
I'm glad to say they find you acceptable. There has been such a sweet brotherhood in our regiment, there being no Presbyterians among us, that none of our officers have been compelled to leave, and the men's grievances have been most adequately represented by yourself and your brother officers. They know you to be an honest Christian soldier with the men's interests at heart. You will accept this new burden, I'm sure.
With great willingness, sir.
You've deserved promotion. Captain White, your good friend, is now Major White, I imagine. All his senior officers having left the army.
Yes, sir, he is, and I am full of joy at his good fortune.
Unfortunately for you, there's been no such overturning in our regiment. And though you could very easily move to a major's rank in Graves' regiment, now Colonel Scroop's, or any one of a dozen others, I prefer to keep you here with me. I hope that's acceptable to you.
More than acceptable, sir. To be Cromwell's captain is worth a dozen majorships.
Without any spiritual pride, sir, I am glad you think so. Make yourself known to Sexby and the other agitators today. And it will, of course, be helpful if you can keep me informed of the nature of their discussions.
Of course, sir. You may take that for granted.
Good. Then we need never speak of it again. Thank you, Captain Reynolds. I must leave now, and you must call upon your new colleagues.
Thank you, sir. Have a safe ride to Childerly, and may the Lord look kindly on your discussions with the King.
Thank you, Captain Reynolds.
What's a guard for, Major White? You think we're going to run away?
Lord General's orders.
What are we then, Major? Traitors or heroes?
Don't ask my opinion, Corporal Thompson.
I should think not, Major. He was Captain White a week ago and committed treasons a lot worse than ours, and you got promoted for it.
Quiet, Will. Is the King still here?
In the garden.
Who's with him?
Cromwell, Fairfax, Ireton, half a dozen others.
All putting their heads together to sell the army for the best price they can get. And first off, we'll all be hanged.
If you can't keep your mouth shut, Corporal Thompson, I'll hand you over to the Provost Marshal.
Are we under arrest here, Major White, or not? No one's told us.
The Lord General asked for the four of you to be brought here.
What do you think, Cornet Joyce? There are important things being said in that garden. Why should they want the four of us sitting in the hall?
We're the forlorn hope, John. Good fellows, heroes maybe, but expendable.
Do you expect me to believe, gentlemen, that Cornet Joyce, a mere boy of the lowest commission rank in the horse, galloped with 500 men and kidnapped his king? And Fairfax, Cromwell and Ireton knew nothing of the matter?
Your Majesty, on my honour as a gentleman, I knew nothing of it.
Honour, Sir Thomas, scarcely comes into it. You have brought me here illegally. Doubly so, without my authority or the authority of my Parliament, whom you claim to serve. Nothing you do can be legal without their authority, just as nothing they do can be legal without mine. So shall we cease the pretense and consider why you have kidnapped me?
With respect, Your Majesty, you've not been kidnapped, but removed for your own safety.
And by your orders, you admit.
No, sir, I do not. I knew that your guard was to be changed. Cornet Joyce had some few words with me on that subject. He had no authority for any further actions from anyone here.
He told me otherwise. Either he is a liar or you are.
Is he here, Edward?
Waiting in the hall.
Bring him out. What do you think, Henry?
He's just using the Joyce business to keep us at a distance.
He wants us to punish him.
And to cause anger in the army.
To cause as much trouble and dissension as possible. He sees himself playing us all off one against the other.
I didn't realize he was such a fool.
He told Fairfax that he understood very well that the true reason for the soldiers' rebellion is that they support him. Fairfax could hardly believe his ears.
He's half mad as well as a fool.
And he's the man we must do a deal with. And we'd be wise not to underrate him.
I wonder what he thinks, being guarded by the likes of us.
Who? The king?
Me a carpenter. George, you was a tailor, weren't you?
Still am.
What about you two?
Our old man's a brewer, down by St. Catherine's.
And a carter.
When London's had enough beer, which isn't very often.
King of England, guarded by two brewer's boys, a tailor and a carpenter. Very friendly, though, isn't he? Easy to talk to.
Charm, John. Comes from meeting foreigners and having plenty of money.
When I told him I was a carpenter and cabinet maker, he said, could I make him a good coffin? I said, I hope there's no call for any such thing for years yet. I'd rather make him a new throne.
What did he say?
He laughed. Said he'd feel a lot safer if all his subjects thought as I did.
You should have taken him at his word and started measuring him up.
He laughs and jokes with us like a good fella. But he's got very cold eyes.
Not like Oliver. I've seen him weep like a baby over a dead trooper who's hardly more than a name to him.
Me too, plenty of times.
He'd rather be with the likes of us than anyone else. That's the fact of the matter. Except his family, of course. Next to God, he worships them. The king's not like that.
He despises us in his heart. Brewers, boys, carpenters, tailors. What are we doing riding along with him knee to knee?
Colonel Joyce, you must come into the garden. What's happening, Major? Do you know?
The king wants to speak to you.
Now what?
We all get hanged. Or become colonels.
Ah, here is my good friend Cornet Joyce. Good afternoon, Cornet. I'm glad to see you again, and not apparently in chains.
My respects to your majesty.
These are very honest, decent fellows of yours, Fairfax, and good soldiers, as I have reason to know. Cornet Joyce, Fairfax ordered you to remove me, did he not?
No, sir, he did not.
You spoke of the authority of the army.
Yes, sir, but not of its commander. He knew nothing at all of the matter.
Ah, my commiserations, Lord General. I pity the commander who knows nothing of the doings of his soldiers. But you did discuss the matter with Cromwell and Ireton, did you not, Cornet?
No, sir, I did not.
Don't lie, sir. Cromwell has said so.
I mentioned only the matter of the guard, Your Majesty, that's all. We had a few words on the advisability of that, no more.
Yes, I can imagine those few words.
We brought you here, sir, because we feared you would be seized by officers of the Parliament and that there would be a second war. There was no time to consult anyone. I did it myself, without orders.
If that is true, Lord General, I shall expect to see Cornet Joyce hanged.
I am willing to stand before the whole army, Your Majesty, and if they disown my action, I shall be quite content to be hanged.
All right, Cornet Joyce. You may return to the hall with the others.
Thank you, Lord General. Your Majesty, gentlemen.
He must be disciplined most severely.
The soldiers won't stand for it. It will tear our unity to shreds.
It will tear our authority to shreds if we don't.
Later. All that can be considered later. Your Majesty is, I hope, convinced of our honesty in this matter and of our deep respect for your sovereignty and safety. Whoever gave the order, I see the clear providence of God in Cornet Joyce's action.
You see the providence of God, Lieutenant General, in what suits you best.
I would never dare blaspheme so far. The fact is, you are safe with the army. The Scots will not invade, nor can the Parliament raise a new force while you are with us.
My jailers, then?
No, your protectors. When your throne is made safe for yourself and for your subjects, we shall place you upon it with all honor as our rightful and unquestioned king.
I am your rightful and unquestioned king, and God placed me upon my throne. The matter is nothing to do with you, sir. I wish you to take me to London so that I may discuss all these questions with my House of Lords and my Commons.
We shall certainly move towards London, and we shall discuss the business with Parliament. But we cannot, for your own and the kingdom's safety, allow you to fall into other hands than our own.
And when do you wish me to grant Cornet Joyce his knighthood?
The matter of Cornet Joyce is closer.
What shall I do with the four of them, sir? They're still in the hall. Send them back to their regiments. For the time being.
Major White.
Yes, Lieutenant General?
Tell them to keep their mouths shut.
Dear Bet, it seems as though I'm speaking to you face to face. Though in truth, I'm speaking only to this journal, not one word of which you've yet seen. Our adventure is over, and we've got out of it with honor, among our own at least. And now we're on the march, Bet. The whole army in a great body. And we're marching toward London. It's 3 years since I've seen you or my little Tom and Robin. And now we're not much more than 20 miles away. When I shall get right home, none of us can say. There are many who feel we'll have to march right up to the doors of the House of Commons before there'll be any peace. And some who say we shall have to fight another war for it, which we all want to avoid at all costs, from the Lord General down to the humblest pioneer. We marched first to Triplow Heath near Royston, where the Parliamentary Commissioners came out to us with their latest plans, which is much the same as their earliest, if the truth be known. We all drew up there on the heath, and the Commissioners read the Parliament's offers at the head of each regiment. Then one of our young officers, Cornet Thompson, whom we'd chosen to speak for us, moved forward.
I propose to the Honourable Commissioners of Parliament that all these matters be referred to the new General Council of the Army.
And is that the will of the whole army?
You have never heard such a sound, Bet. It sounded, as I imagine, the acclamation of the saints round the throne of God. The commissioners ran back to London that same evening. They know they'll get nothing from the soldiers, whatever the officers might be disposed to give them. Dear Bet, more and more I think of you, of coming back to Southwark and quitting soldiering for good. Yet more and more I seem to find myself drawn into the centre of events. We're just marching into St. Albans this evening, where we're to take 3/4 of our time. 20 miles, my love. Only 20 miles.
Order, gentlemen! Order! I must insist, as your chairman, on calling this council of agitators to order, or you'll get nothing done or even said audibly. Corporal Thompson, please continue.
I say again, brothers, officers and soldiers, we have seen nothing yet. Listen to the preaching among the soldiers. Listen to what Cornet Den says when the fire is on him, or many another soldier in his inspiration. We are the generation born to turn the world upside down. And the way we do that, brothers, is very simple. We ask questions, and we insist on having answers. Why are Cromwell and Fairfax the only ones who decide what this army does? Why are they secretly closeted with the king? To sell up the kingdom and betray the liberty we all fought for? What has that king to do with anything now we've defeated him? Why should his word be considered more than mine, or yours, or any man in the army? Why does Cromwell have a seat in Parliament and not Shakespeare or Lockyer or William Thompson? Hey, hey. William Thompson doesn't even have a vote, though his sword and his blood have bought our liberty as much as any. Why are the lawyers still as devious, and the merchants still as rich, and the landowners still as rapacious with our commons and woodlands as they were before we fought the war? We won it, didn't we? The plain men of England. So where is our victory? Why are the laws in Latin, so no ordinary man can understand them? Why are our maimed soldiers and their widows starving in the streets of London, while the Parliament men vaunt themselves more money and lands every day? What happens to all that money confiscated from royalists and malignants? None of it comes to us, I do know that much.
Your brother's inspired tonight.
I wish it were only the spirit of God put that fire in his cheeks.
What do you mean?
Can't you tell? He's had more than one pint of ale tonight.
Well, there's not many soldiers don't like a drink or two. Whatever the chaplain say, it doesn't make them drunkard.
Bill's not a drunkard. It's just every now and again.
Yeah, you'd never tell. And he doesn't deny the truth of what he's saying.
Scares me when he works himself up that way. His eyes blaze like gun barrels when the beer gets into his head.
Corporal Thompson is right!
We have all listened with admiration to Corporal Thompson's words and the words of many other honest men tonight. But it is near midnight and we should bring this meeting to a close.
I must remind our chairman that he is to ride to London tomorrow to carry the gist of our discussions to Lieutenant Colonel Lilburn in the Tower. None but officers can leave the camp at the moment, and it is essential that we keep Lilburn informed.
I haven't forgotten, Trooper Sexby. I shall ride at first light with the greatest eagerness and report back to this council as soon as I return. So now, gentlemen, I suggest we adjourn to our quarters. Major White!
Jack! Goodbye, Lewis. I'll see you in the morning.
Goodbye, Francis. Captain Reynolds.
I was glad to see you and Captain Audley here, Francis.
Where else would we be?
Has there ever been a more exciting time? Such a sense of things to be doing.
Where are you lodging?
Near the cathedral.
I'll walk back with you.
I've hardly seen you since your promotion. So much deserved.
So much good fortune, you mean? When all the other officers fall in the charge, the one who's left becomes the commander.
Not at all. You took a dangerous chance with great courage. Leaders are what the men want, and you led. Need more like you.
Well, they did as much pushing as I did leading. I'm sorry, you had no such chance. You're undervalued as a captain.
I could have had promotion in another regiment, but I'm happy where I am. You know where the power is in this army. The soldiers.
And how they express that power. Through the Council of Agitators.
Of which I am the chairman. There's no knowing what'll happen in the next few weeks, but we're both in the right position to see it as clearly as anyone. The most ambitious young officer in the army couldn't ask for more.
Which you are.
Unless I give place to you. Listen, can you come with me to London tomorrow? Fairfax will surely welcome any information you can gather about their state of readiness there.
Certainly, there's more lurid rumours every day.
Where is he? At his lodgings?
We shall have to travel as gentlemen, though, not soldiers. London's a dangerous place for army officers.
I shall revert to my old Inns of Court persona, and you can be my fellow scholar.
I'll speak to Fairfax tonight. He sleeps so little, he's never abed before the early hours.
And then we might kill two birds with a single shot, eh?
Penelope, you mean?
Well, why not?
I ought to visit my father in his new house. If only to flaunt my rank.
But I must ride at first light.
I'll send you lodgings as soon as I've seen Fairfax.
Good night, then.
Good night. I'll hope to see you in the morning.
Yes, madam, this is the Lord General's lodging, but I don't see what business you have to be
I
here.
I must see the Lord General.
That's out of the question, madam. There's an important officers' meeting just about to begin.
I'm John Lilburn's wife.
Lieutenant Colonel Lilburn in the Tower.
You don't know him, sir. You must be the only man in England who does.
Oh, of course I do, but it's 6 o'clock and most of the officers are already
just
here.
Just tell him who I am. Oh, Lord General, I must speak with you.
I beg you to excuse me, madam.
Your Excellency.
Lord General, she says she's Elizabeth
Lilburn. I am Elizabeth Lilburn, and I've walked here from the Tower to see you.
You walked here, all the way from London?
Yes, sir. As soon as I heard for certain the army was at St. Albans, I set out, before dawn.
All right, Captain Audley. You may come in, madam, but I can give you too little attention at the moment. As you see, my quarters are full of officers, and we're about to meet in council.
A few words will suffice, sir, to the right men.
Gentlemen, may I ask your respect and your prayers for Mistress Elizabeth, John Lilburn's wife, who has walked here today all the way from the Tower to speak to us. Oh, I won't introduce all these gentlemen, madam, but Lieutenant General Cromwell, you know.
Yes.
And Commissary Ireton, his son-in-law, and Colonels Worley, Harrison and Fleetwood, I've no doubt.
Good evening, gentlemen.
I presume you have some message for us from your husband, madam.
If I may interrupt, Lord General, I have today received a long letter from Lieutenant Colonel Lilburn, in which he urges us to march on London at the earliest opportunity.
Has he heard of the paper we have just published? The army's representation?
We've heard that you've asked the House to expel the 11 members who've been most active against the army.
It contains that and some other things. So what more have you to tell us?
simply to implore you to act in my own person, not by letter, to beg you to save my husband's life.
Well, how can his life be at risk? He's imprisoned by the order of the Lords. The charge is known and public. It is not a capital one.
You don't know what it's like in London now, sir. Call it panic or hysteria or whatever you will, but it's the sort of fear that leaves men dead in the streets. There are so many discharged soldiers from both armies, half-starved and desperate for employment, and the Parliament is enlisting thousands of them in the city militia. John tells you for certain that the 11 members, Hollies and Stapleton and the rest, will never leave the house unless you chase them out of it. They're the leaders of the strongest faction there, and they're not likely to run away just because you say so. They think they can defeat you, and they are preparing for battle. And if it comes to that, my husband will not survive. He has spoken out for the soldiers too loudly and too often for them to let him live if it comes to open war. They're not ready for you yet, and a swift move could cause panic. But each day they get stronger, and each day my husband's chances get less.
What you say is most serious, madam, and worth reasoned consideration. I will ask Captain Audley to see you comfortably lodged.
I must get back to the tower, sir, as soon as I can.
But not tonight, I think. So perhaps you would permit yourself to dine with some few of us after this meeting to tell us more. And tomorrow we shall see you transported back to London more comfortably than you came. Captain Audley, take the greatest care of Mistress Lilburn.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Lord General.
Did you have nothing with you, madam? No baggage?
No, Captain. Just my bare hands.
What are you doing to these houses, friend?
Knocking them down.
Why do that? They look sound enough.
Yeah, who are you to be asking such questions?
Two poor scholars, sir, come up to London to study.
Can't you think of anything better to do than that? You're a strong fellow. Can you handle a fight?
Well, perhaps some slight knowledge of it, sir.
Yeah, the girl enlists in Parliament's army.
What are they here? I heard they were in Essex somewhere, or Cambridge.
Nah, not that lot of Anabaptists and ranters. The city militia. We'll soon put a stop to their madness the same way she did with a mad dog, a sharp stick down his throat and push.
You sound like an old soldier, sir.
Yeah, I am. I fought with the Earl of Essex and Sir William Waller. They were good old commanders.
And is that why you're putting these houses down?
Look, if you knew a bit about the art of war, scholar, you'd know that we're clearing the ground to build a bastion to protect the approaches to the city. The suburbs always have to be cleared.
Oh, what's a bastion?
It's an earthwork fortification to absorb the enemy's cannon shot and to provide enfilading fire on his men. I don't suppose you know what that is, either.
We're just poor scholars, sir. All this military science is beyond
us. Yeah, well, I've got no time to stand here teaching you today, so get yourselves out of the way. If you've got anything in you, go and enlist.
Got a shilling, sir, for a crust of bread.
Of your charity, gentlemen. God rewards all almsgivers.
I can't believe this, John. There must be 20 or 30 of them scattered all around the court, and it's barely 25 feet across.
Most of them crippled.
Or blinded.
Why are there so many of you here, good friend?
We all gather here, sir. There's more kindness among our own kind.
And the ash pit and the kilns and the glassworks keep us warm at night. Yeah. Better to starve in company, sir.
So many crippled. Are any of your soldiers?
Most of us, sir. I lost my leg and right hand at Naseby, sir. Lucky not to die. Or maybe not so lucky.
Who are you fighting for?
Oh, I was never a king's man, sir. My prayers are my own business. I was one of Cromwell's troopers, the old Ironsides.
And you're reduced to this state?
Oh, we're all great fellows, sir. We're my whole. No better in the kingdom.
Most of this lot of Parliament soldiers or their widows. Couple of fellows from Morley's regiment over there, and Sir Robert Pryor's. Half a dozen royalists, too. All come to the same end. Don't matter how much who you fought for, does it, sir, when you're blind, or with no legs on a trolley, or starving?
Here, good woman. Here's a guinea.
No, no, sir.
Buy some meat. Get a good stew going, for God's sake.
Don't I know you, sir? Were you ever a soldier?
No, I'm a poor scholar. I know nothing of the army.
Oh, thank you, sir. The Lord will bless you, sir, as he blesses all almsgivers.
Did you know? Of course I did. He rode in my own troop.
Nancy! What are you doing here?
Come to see you.
and father, and this unexpected town dwelling.
And you're well and safe?
Safe? Of course I'm safe.
We heard so many rumours and everything's so unsettled.
You've been to church this morning, Pen?
To church?
With St. Paul's, just outside the front door?
No, I haven't. I don't go every day.
Put on a hat, a large one, and your biggest cloak, and go and have a few moments of private prayer, now.
In St. Paul's? I hardly think there's anywhere left to pray, with all the shopkeepers in the portico and cavalry stabled in the nave.
But if you make your way to the partitioned-off area at the East End, where Mr. Burgess preaches his sermons, you may find a good friend waiting for you. Hurry now, there's only a few minutes.
But in the church...
What could be more pleasing to the Lord, Pen, than the sight of a meeting of two honest hearts? What better place than his house? But hurry.
Yes, of course.
Now, where's Father?
He has a study upstairs at the back.
Well, Francis, why are we in London? What's happened?
You must congratulate me, Father. I'm Major White now. I've been promoted. Third in command of the regiment under Fairfax himself and Lieutenant Colonel Colbert brought over from Harley's.
You're not dressed like a soldier. You look more like a bencher of the Middle Temple.
I'm on a special mission for the Lord General, for which a soldier's gear would not be suitable.
You mean you're a spy?
And I took the opportunity to visit my family. I can hardly believe in you in this setting, Father. What brought you up to London? I thought you were well rooted in the country.
I'm beginning to wonder. Every day there are crowds in the streets shouting one thing or another, soldiers rushing up and down with naked swords or firing pistols and carbines in the air, or apprentice boys, madmen of 15 and 16, rusting through the streets at night with blazing torches so that they risk setting the whole city alight. And what for? For the mere beastliness of it. Certainly not for any god or cause that I ever heard of.
These are dangerous times.
And how did you come to rise so high so quickly? What happened to your commanders?
There's been a great earthquake in the army. The soldiers threw them out. The
soldiers threw out their commanders? Why didn't they throw you out?
I took their side.
I would have called that a traitorous betrayal of trust. But no doubt things are different in God's army.
Yes, they are. We're making all things new.
Why a man can't sit peacefully in his study, I don't know. I came here to enrich my understanding and to discuss certain matters appertaining to the heavens with learned men of my acquaintance.
Is that all you came for?
Not to find myself in the middle of a riot every day and gangs marauding the streets at night. Man, I've never seen so many beggars in London, never in my life before.
That's the Parliament's fault. They've summoned all disbanded soldiers to London to enlist, and they haven't the money for a quarter of them. So they roam the streets without employment, getting angrier by the minute.
And are you and all the rest of the saints marching here with your cavalry and siege guns to burn down the city and put us all to the sword? They say so on every street corner.
No, I didn't mean you were the sort of man who believes what he hears on street corners, Father.
I don't care a feather's weight for any of you. One god or another, the king or the Parliament... or whoever. I am a man of books, a man of scholarship and learning, and these things have nothing to do with me. I wish only to be left in peace.
And where do you think your learned man's peace comes from? Poor illiterate fellows buy it for you with their heart's blood. I should have thought a man as well read as you would have understood that much at least by now.
My dear Miss White, dearest Penelope, I saw you over by the horses and I was almost sure it must be you in spite of your cloak.
And I was almost sure it must be you.
I fear I offended you when last we met, asking for your hand before you were ready to hear any such thing from me.
No, Captain, no. That was almost 6 months ago. It seems that ages pass in a few weeks in times like these.
I can hardly believe it was so long. And I've been quite unable to see you in all that time.
Because of my father?
Oh, not only because of him. I dare hardly say it to your face, madam, but we are living in one of the great ages of the world. When a man's duties tear him away from his pleasures and his delights quite mercilessly. You know Lovelace's verses. I could not love thee, dear, so much.
Loved I not honor more? Of course I do. But I am surprised to hear you quote Cavaliers and Malignants, Captain.
If my enemy speaks my own thoughts, so much the better for him.
I understand, sir. And I know what danger you are in coming to London at the present time.
I am here on army matters, you realize that. But the opportunity to meet you could not be missed. People act more quickly when time is short, and snatched moments are doubly precious. The great bell. There are some who would stop it. just as they have forbidden the singing and smashed the organ. I count myself as strict as any, but I do believe music to be pleasing to God and justifiable in his house, particularly such a great house as this. And I don't like seeing horses stabled in the nave.
So glad to hear you say that. Music is half my life. I could never live without my playing and singing.
That is a pleasure we will look forward to in more peaceful times. When a man can afford to sit and make music in his own house with his wife beside him. If I dare hope for that.
Yes, Captain. Please hope. Please do.
Oh, my dear Canada.
But you know my situation and what plans my father has for me.
Francis has told me.
You must do something. You must ask Father again for me, whatever he says. Otherwise he will fix up some match for me without my consent. And then what shall I do?
At the worst, if you can't tell me, tell Francis. He will let me know somehow.
But when will it be?
My dears, I can't tell. Not till present events have come to some kind of resolution. Everything is at stake in the next few weeks. All the freedoms we have fought for. But I shall keep in touch with you somehow, I swear. And I shall not let any man marry you. Unless that man is myself.
My dear Jack, make haste. No, you can't. It's not in the middle of the...
He's here, behind the pillar. Only God can see us here. He created our flesh and blesses it. And all the bodily passions we feel, he feels too. They are his work. And the devil has no part in
them. Oh, Jack. Jack. Let me hear from you. Regularly, somehow.
Somehow, Penelope. I swear it.
Those three gentlemen are a long time with your husband, Mistress Lilburn. It's my hope there's no sedition being talked in there.
Not at all, sir. Prayers, more likely.
Nor any passing of books in or out. I shall search them most strictly, madam. Their breeches too, if I see cause.
Mr. Wildman, the lawyer, is advising my husband on the state of our business affairs. The other two young gentlemen are students of the law, both very keen to meet him.
We live in a strange time, madam, when students come to learn the law of a man locked up in the tower.
You cannot imagine, Colonel Lilburn, how complete a revolution has occurred in the army since June the 5th. 29 officers of the foot and 22 of the horse have gone. 5 colonels of horse, 4 majors and a similar number in the foot. In all, about one-third of the new model officers have resigned or been driven away by their soldiers.
I didn't realize you'd have such a thoroughgoing reformation as that. Did you, Wildman?
We get no certain information here. You gentlemen are the only ones who know all the facts.
All the Presbyterians have simply left, been thrown out or deserted or come here to London to take up the Parliament's office. We've seen some of them today, haven't we, Jack? Even a couple from our own regiment.
So now, the army is more united than it has ever been, and for the simplest of reasons. It is a 100% independent army.
Have you seen the paper called the Army's Representation?
Oh, I know the gist of it.
Your wife has a copy about her person. We gave it to her just before we came in.
My wife has had more subversive literature close to her heart or right round her belly than can possibly be good for any woman of sense.
Well, 2 months ago, the army was demanding pay and not to be disbanded. This is different. It's a scheme for the settlement of the kingdom set out point by point.
An expulsion of the 11 members from the House, first of all. But then, arrangements for the Parliament to be regularly elected. Large-scale reform of representation.
Gentlemen, you're running away with yourselves. I've been telling the soldiers for the past year that more than their wages was at stake. Do you think Cromwell and Fairfax and Ireland would have done it on their own? They would settle with the king on terms suitable for gentlemen, and the rest of us could go whistle. The soldiers pushed him, and I pushed the soldiers. We've been writings over the last 2 years, which the common men who carry pikes and carbines have recognised to be true. What I say to you, gentlemen, is don't trust these officers, not one inch of the way. Lizzie, come in here.
Don't trust them, why not?
Because their interests and the soldiers' interests are not the same. Because I'm still in prison, and others like me. Oh, many reasons.
I don't like to be the warden either, Lizzie.
Oh, well, we're all very suspicious, aren't we, gentlemen? Tell them what happened at your little dinner party with the High Command.
They were very courteous to me, questioned me very closely about what was going on in
London. No, not that. Later.
Later, there was much talk of a new paper Ayrton was preparing, and of the King, and their meetings with him. Some of that I wasn't meant to hear, but I kept my ears open.
Yes, see, gentlemen, what they're up to. They're drawing up some kind of treaty with the King, which Ayrton will write, being their brain box amongst all the beefheads and bully boys, and which the General Council of the Army will never see. Or not until the deed is done and the nation brought safely to bed with a king again.
You've no evidence to say that, Colonel.
None but the fact that I know Cromwell like the back of my hand for our many years' service together, and the logic of the situation which demands that kind of action from him. The nation has to be settled. The only question is, who will dictate the settlement? The soldiers or the officers?
We are called to a general council at Reading in 2 days' time. All the agitators will be
and
there.
That I'll lay my life on it. Not much of a bet in the present circumstances, I admit, will be when the matter will be raised.
That may be, but the great demand will be for an immediate march on London. I know the temper of the men, and they won't be satisfied with less.
And what will they do when they get here?
Well,
yeah, that's right, Major White. It hasn't crossed their innocent minds, like you, that haven't given it so much as a thought. But I have, which is why Mr. Wildman is with me, to help draw up a document that will be more to our taste than anything Ireton might write.
Gentlemen, the warden's getting very suspicious, and if he realises they are...
Yes, gentlemen, Lizzie's right. Thank you for your news and the copy of the representation. Both invaluable to me.
Thank you, sir. It is more than interesting to hear your thoughts.
It's a great honour to meet a man who's done so much for the nation's liberty.
Oh, well, Major, I appreciate what you say. See you now, Lizzie.
This way, Jim.
Well, Wildman, what do you make of him?
Full of fire, in passion for the cause, very young.
Well, so are you. Mind, you have a 45-year-old head on those 22-year-old shoulders. For the moment, at least.
Do you trust them?
No, I don't trust anybody. Not even you. White is Fairfax's man. Reynolds, Cromwell's, that's obvious.
White led the Chelmsford Mutiny on his own, and Reynolds is chairman of the agitators.
Oh, yes, I believe you. But no man has to be one thing to the exclusion of all others. White can be Fairfax's man and lead a mutiny.
Not forever. Eventually, people have to choose.
Indeed. That time comes for all of us. It hasn't come for them yet, but it will. Then it'll be more than interesting to see which way they jump.
This general council of the army, sitting under the eye of the Lord in his town of Reading, has heard the proposals put forward by Captain Reynolds on behalf of the agitators for the impeachment of 11 members of the House of Commons, the control of the city militia, and other matters. And we now proceed to debate. Commissary Ayrton.
These are all very good things that the Council of Agitators has proposed, and very like proposals of our own in many particulars.
Yes, Commissary, we are all agreed that they are good things, but what is the force of them when we sit here in Reading?
Identify yourself, sir.
Thompson, Wallace's regiment. When we came close to them at St. Albans, they listened to us. The 11 members no longer sat in the house. The enlisting of militiamen, see? Now we have marched away to Reading, Hollis and Stapleton hold meetings in their house daily, and vote thousands to enlist a whole army against us! Yeah!
Major Tulliver!
It all centres on one thing, Lord General. All these proposals of ours will be so much meaningless noise unless we march to London to enforce them.
Well, Lord General, to march to London is one idea among many, and not the only thing we can do.
If I may say so, Lord General, and principally to our friends, the agitators, we must not be seen to act as though we only wanted to get power into our own hands. Everything we have been about is to prevent power being in the hands of one man or a group of men. We must give the whole kingdom satisfaction.
What the commissary has said is the perfect and just truth of the matter. I urge most earnestly that we should all withdraw to... all withdraw to consider a paper the commissary has been preparing, designed to ensure the just settlement of the kingdom we all require, and that power should not fall into the hands of ill-affected men or those who do not know how best to use it.
Order, gentlemen! Order! Trooper Lockyer.
What the Lieutenant General is saying is simply a tactic to delay us further. While we sit here talking, they're getting ready in London to fight us.
We can't march to London without some indication of what we are marching for.
Well, what is the use, Commissary, of writing documents and making plans for kingdoms of the mind
when the real power lies in the hands of evil men in the House of Commons who are determined to destroy us. Let us get the power into our hands. Then we can decide what to do with it.
Lieutenant General!
Gentlemen, I listen in all humility to what is said in this council, trying with all my heart to hear where the voice of God is to be heard in so many contending voices. But this much I am sure of. Many of you are suspicious of any kind of treaty with the Parliament. You say, and you say justly, that it is dangerous to be deluded by a treaty when those men who oppose us in the House are merely seeking our destruction by this or by any other means. And what you say may be true. It may be that we shall have to march on London, but I beg you to consider this, that what we gain by way of agreement will be a firm and lasting settlement, whereas what is gained by force must be held by force, can never be lasting except as a lasting stain on our consciences. Even if we achieve the very godly settlement we hope for, if we achieve it by force alone, it will be weak to the heart and will not endure. I beg you, gentlemen, to be well advised in this, to send our list of requirements once again to the House and to give them a few days to answer us like rational men.
And if after 4 days we have no satisfaction?
Then, under the eyes of God, we must march.
Penelope? Is that you?
God help me, Father. I'm lucky to get home alive. I walked with Martha down to the cheesemongers, then came back while she went on. Suddenly I was surrounded by a great mob of madmen, apprentices and soldiers like animals stampeding.
I saw them. They're still going past. Hundreds of them.
They nearly trampled me underfoot. I had to squeeze back against the door under the overhang to be safe.
What are they screaming for this time?
The king.
The king?
They're going to the Parliament, one of them shouted at me, to compel them to sign a petition to bring the king back. They had halberds and swords and pistols with them.
Another war. It means another war. Bolt all the doors and windows.
Martha,
I don't care about that. Shoot every bolt and lock in the house.
Mr. Speaker, I have to inform you that the house is under attack.
I hear the noise, Sergeant at Arms.
But they're coming up the steps to the chamber door, sir, demanding we pass the petition.
Can you not keep them out, Sergeant?
No, sir. I don't think we can.
The house is attacked! The house is attacked! I am the sheriff!
Now, James, it's action. Nothing will hold us back now. Hounslow Heath tomorrow night to stay, and that means we'll be in London in 3 days. Drink up that tankard and have another one.
No, thanks. John, one's enough. My brother drinks enough for both of us.
Not much more than a week, and I'll be with my bet and my lads again after all these years of marching, riding and shooting.
He's over there with some of his mates from Worley's regiment. They've been playing cards and drinking all afternoon.
I can't wait, James. I just can't wait.
Hey, you are, Corporal Thompson. Right, he catches the whole kit.
Oh, no, you don't.
This is more than a flesh and blood what the manager.
Hey, can you touch that money, sir?
Hey,
you can't.
I never did.
We played that undertaker.
You're a fool. You're a fool.
That's enough. This is a respectable
thing. Don't you call me captain. Don't you insult me, ma'am. I'm not an officer. Corporal,
can you? No, no, don't be a trouble to me, sir. My good man is ill.
Don't touch that money.
That's mine. I want that.
Oh, God, help.
Get up.
Stay up.
Dear heavens, John, what's going on over there?
Your brother's gone mad.
Not only, Corporal Thompson, were you drunkenly gambling in this landlord's honest house where soldiers were soberly drinking their draught with other decent citizens. You savagely fought with another soldier, and when the landlady tried to part you, you threw her down and kicked her in the face, attacked and injured her servants, and broke 2 chairs and a table and 3 earthenware pots.
I was being tricked.
Later that night, when the heat of intoxication must have been less upon you, you came back with three fellow beasts, beat the servants again, one of them within an inch of his life, and destroyed the landlord's parlour. What have you to say?
The woman had stolen the state money and pickpocketed me. She owed me £30.
You were drunk as a beast, Corporal. You know the rule of the army, and that this kind of behaviour to the citizens of our own country will not be tolerated. You are no longer a soldier of this army.
But
you will
Lord
be cashiered tomorrow, in front of your regiment, and dismissed in disgrace.
But, Lord General...
Count yourself lucky enough to be hanged, Corporal. I have hanged men for less than you have done.
Lord General, my whole life has been in the army for 5 years.
Yes, sir. And now it is over. We are God's army. About his work. We have no room in our ranks for drunken madmen.
But this is a plot. That's what it is. It's a plot. Because I'm a soldier's representative.
No, sir. You're not fit to represent anybody. Guards, take him out and keep him chained till the morning.
There's nothing at all to do with being drunk. Everybody gets drunk once in a while.
Get him out of here. Major White.
Yes, sir.
Here are the orders of the day for tomorrow. We march at first light. Tomorrow night we make camp on Hounslow Heath.
God is our refuge and our strength, his praise the present day.
London, Bet. London. Only two more days.
Though hills and mountains seek to cross the waters of the day.
In Summer Maneuvers, Part 4 of God's Revolution by Don Taylor, Cromwell was played by Bernard Hepton, Fairfax by Nigel Anthony, John Church by Eric Allen, and Francis White by Graham Blockie. William Thompson was Anthony Jackson, James Thompson, Simon Cuff, Cornet Joyce, Jonathan Nibbs, John Lilburn, Christian Rodska, and Elizabeth Lilburn, Maureen O'Brien. Charles I was William Edel, Ireton, Bill Wallace, Colonel Woolley and Sexby were John Hartock, Penelope, Deborah Makepeace, Stephen White, David March, and Edmund, Cornelius Garrett. Reynolds was Kim Wall, the beggar woman was June Tobin, and John Wildman, Stephen Rashbrook. God's Revolution, Part 4, was directed in Bristol by Sean McLaughlin.
The God of Jacob,